Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of February, recording at 9:06 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, just a quick review of the week. Actually, it was a quieter week than most, but we have seen some evidence that stock market rallies are stalling. The exceptions have been a few late to catch-up moves by some of the, or partial catch-up moves by some of the laggards. That's understandable. But people are beginning to question the sustainability of the overall stock market rallies. Government bonds, they've been under pressure for a while. A little bit of firmness in here today, sort of checking those declines. The U.S. market in particular showed a good bounce off today's lows. Might have been an upside key day reversal. It was close to it. I'll have to check again. And in terms of currencies, the dollar's enjoyed a rally here, having been ranging lower really since the November highs. So that's firmed up really on interest rate expectations, which is not that surprising. And metals, mostly strong in here, although silver looking a little tired in the last couple of days, and gold looking a little tired in here today, but hey, it's still at 568.90 on the spot price. That's only down $3 on the day, and $3.30. And palladium breaking through to a new high. Agricultural commodities generally firmer in here today. Okay, what about the big picture outlook? I'm wary here as far as the short to medium term is concerned. And it's global stock markets first, but I'm concerned about all markets generally. Now, we also have in the Fuller Money family a lot of new subscribers who have come in the last 2-3 months. It's been one of the strongest periods of new subscriptions that I've seen, and I'm absolutely delighted at that, and welcome all. And I think one of the things that has encouraged people to come in is that some of the existing subscribers who are great proselytizers, and I thank you for that, have been enjoying some of the fine runs that we've had here in markets. And there can be a tendency for some of the new people who've come in to think, well, I'd really like to try to catch up if I can on all these opportunities. This may not apply to you, but I'm obviously generalizing. Or some of the veteran subscribers who maybe were a little cautious and feel that they've missed out on some opportunities may feel an urge to try to catch up with some late moves in this cycle. Again, that I'm generalizing. And there may be some people who get unrealistic expectations about what is achievable over the long term. And let's face it, for those of us who've been participating in some of these high-flying emerging markets and in the resources sector in particular, the last 3 months have been excellent money-making opportunities. And we see this reflected in the generous comments that have come in from subscribers and people saying that January alone more than covered their subscription costs for many, many years. And of course, I'm delighted to see all of that. And it's also encouraging. It's inspirational feedback for Owen and myself. But let's think about this and the implications of this. It's also a warning sign. You know, and I know, that it isn't always easy to make money in these markets, and particularly when we get sudden changes in overall trends. And I do fear that we are not all that far away from perhaps a significant trend change, at least in the medium term. And some of the reasons for that, well, I've really discussed them at such length, and I don't want to make this an interminably long audio. You'll be relieved to hear. But several points here. First, the 34 months of this very good rally from the March 2003 lows. Some of the trend acceleration that we have seen recently means that gravity is increasingly going to be a problem. We've certainly seen a fair amount of euphoria in the markets. I don't think these are huge bubbles, but acceleration is unsustainable beyond the short or at most medium term, and therefore it is a trend ending characteristic. Now, a trend hasn't ended, of course. An accelerating trend hasn't ended until we get the very clear downward dynamics, the sharp reaction to break the overall upward momentum. But we're trying to look ahead here a little bit, and I do expect these breaks in upward momentum for a number of markets before too very long. And another item that I've stressed in here, if you look at the focus technically on the January reaction lows. Well, the NASDAQ 100, interestingly, not the NASDAQ composite, but the NASDAQ 100 has actually broken its January reaction lows in here today. Now, that's only one US index of the ones that I've checked. And there are lots of them, of course, in the chart library, and I might have a further look over the weekend. Commend that to you as well. But that's a warning sign. It's not game, set, and match, but I said there's nothing to worry about technically as long as those January reaction lows hold. Now, why, when I said it's interesting that it was the 100 index and not the NASDAQ composite, and Google's the big influence there, because this was a week in which Google resumed its decline from the January high. Now, so what? That's just one overhyped stock. Yes, but it's kind of a bellwether thing in terms of overall sentiment. While Google was moving ever higher and people were beginning, some of the analysts covering Google were getting carried away and competing with themselves in terms of making ridiculous forecasts for price appreciation. That is a danger sign. It's shades in a smaller version of much smaller version of what we had seen back in 1999 and early 2000. So concerns here, and then there's a possibility of another oil shock. Now, I think it's almost inevitable that we will get that this year. Now, I think it was 2 or 3 days ago. I think it was 3 days ago we saw downside key day reversal as oil was backing away from the Katrina highs. And it fell sharply again yesterday. It's steadied up in here today. I think that another, as I say, another oil shock would create a very strong headwind for global stock markets. And then there are the government bond yields, which need to be watched. I feel there's much too much complacency regarding government bonds, and I'll say a little bit more on that in a moment. So, I've used the term, I hope not frightening people too much, but I want to spell out my concerns here because people say, yes, these are all things that we'll keep an eye on, but there's still a great money-making opportunity in here, isn't there, in the short term? And well, maybe, but I have described stock markets as waltzing into a cul-de-sac here, and I don't think it's all that far from the end of this cul-de-sac. At this particular moment in time, can I say that the rally is over for sure? No. My best case scenario, though, really had it carrying through to the end of the first quarter, which would mean we had nearly 2 months to go. But the sand is running out in the hourglass, as far as this rally is concerned. And I don't think we need to go piling out of positions in here on Monday morning, but we need to be thinking about lightening where perhaps we're overextended, where there are the leveraged plays. I think I should probably start to peg back some of my leveraged plays, and I have quite a few of them, or just to, well, the policy actually that I have used, which will certainly peg them back, is the policy of the rising in the money stops that I have used with many of my speculative trading positions. I'm unlikely to make any alterations in a number of my long-term holdings, even though some of them have done far better than I would have hoped from the period in October. But I think it was about mid-October when we started to get some terrific upward dynamics. And you might remember, veteran subscribers remember, signaling that we'd reached a bottom, and that's when I began to talk about the best case scenario was that this rally would remain strong throughout not only year end, but carry well into and perhaps through the first quarter of 2006. And it's been a great run. And some of these positions, for thinking of my India investments, for instance, and the resources, many of the resources investments have, and I was obviously bullish of those markets, or I wouldn't have held those positions, but I've been very pleasantly surprised by the actual strength that they've seen. So that leaves those investments vulnerable, everything vulnerable, to a correction which could easily last 3 months to 6 months, although I think that would be the outside of the correction. When you read Robin Griffiths here today, and I haven't posted this yet, but the paragraph that I chose to quote, and he's talking about Wall Street retracing half of its gains from the 2002 low. I think that's too much. I don't see that happening, because I think the Fed would be slashing interest rates well before that could occur and pumping loads and loads of liquidity into the system. That won't always work, perhaps, but we've been hearing that for a very long time. That certainly is the Fed's preferred modus operandi for dealing with any kind of pending economic or financial crisis, pump in huge amounts of liquidity. And that's what, of course, has sown the seeds for a long-term inflation, but that's another story. What I'm trying to say here on stock markets is that I think now is the time to think, what would I like to prune from my portfolio? What's perhaps done a little bit too good? If you don't actually prune it, maybe you move up some stops, at least on speculative positions. So say, as I've been saying all along, and as I feel right now today, I'm pretty well resided to riding out some fairly biggish corrections in some of my favorite long-term investment positions. Now, why would I do that? Why not chop them all? Because first, I could be wrong regarding the correction, and then find myself scrambling back in later on. And also, those investment positions are unleveraged, and therefore, these are positions that I like for the very long term. They're mainly in Asian markets and in Asian stock markets and in the industrial resources sector that I expect to be holding for a good many years, and where I would use setbacks as a buying opportunity. And incidentally, I have been running with those themes for the last 3 years. Fortunately, they've been good performing areas. And in terms of my investments, I'm not really interested in the game of saying, well, now do we switch from resources to retailing, or do we switch to IT or whatever. You know, which is that very active sort of money management game, and I'm not casting any aspersions on those who do that or need to do that, particularly in the very competitive area of fund management where their figures are closely scrutinized on a on a quarterly basis or even on a monthly on a monthly basis. I'm interested in finding what I feel are the best medium to longer term, preferably longer term opportunities, and running those in terms of looking for major secular trend moves. And whereas I feel we have secular bull markets in industrial resources and secular bull markets in emerging markets, I think we just have cyclical opportunities in retailing and cyclical opportunities in IT and cyclical opportunities in utility. So I'm not really interested in trying to catch those cyclical swings. I'm really after the big trending secular bull market moves. And so I'm quite content, as I say, to continue to look at this area of industrial resources, which have seen huge moves. So we do have this risk of corrections, as I've been saying. Now, if and when, it's not a matter of if, but when Wall Street heads down, and that may well be one of the markets that leads on the way down. There are two schools of thought on this here, relevant digression. One is that Wall Street, too, and we've heard this certainly from the U.S. Pundits, particularly at the year end, saying, well, Wall Street lagged in 2005, therefore it'll lead on the upside in 2006. Maybe, possibly, on some sort of Buggins turn basis, but I don't really buy into that argument. First, the valuations are nowhere near as attractive as they are in some other markets, although they're less, Wall Street is less overvalued than other markets. I'm more of the school that says Wall Street has been lagging for a reason, and that reason, veteran subscribers will recall, I've said is I've described a secular bear market on Wall Street. And at this point, I can imagine some new subscribers saying, what on earth is he talking about? By secular bear market, I don't mean a downtrend necessarily. That it is not incompatible with the 34-month uptrend that we have seen, but I talk about a generational, describe a secular bear market as a generational long process of valuation contraction. In other words, people realize that they're no longer in the 1990s type of environment, so they become more conservative. The odd Google aside, they don't drive shares up to ludicrous heights to the same extent. They want more in the way of dividends, and so we see a more conservative approach from investors relative to what they had seen in the last bubble type of environment overall. And it's worth repeating a figure that veteran subscribers will be familiar with. For instance, at the beginning of Wall Street's last secular bull market, and I would date that right back to the second quarter of 1982, the S&P 500 index yielded 6.21%. Well, what does it yield now? Two or a little above? A little above two, probably. So valuation contraction is a secular theme that I expect for Wall Street, and that's one of the reasons for the underperformance. Now, some stock markets saw massive valuation contraction, and I think in particular to my favorite area in terms of safety and also potential. That's the Asian emerging markets, and we saw some very low multiples and some very high yields. You get a market like Thailand, for instance, which not all that long ago was yielding 4.5% on the SET index and selling at a multiple of 10 or 11. You see, this is the type of value that I'm talking about, and also the type of valuation compression that I expect at Wall Street to achieve over a number of years. It will be partly because of a more cautious attitude among investors, but the economy moves along reasonably well, it will also include, of course, growth, which enables companies to raise dividends, and combined with that cautious attitude, more cautious attitude among investors, we see multiples coming down as well. And that's a good thing generally, but it does mean underperformance for a long period. Now, where else to take this? I've already described my two big themes in here since really go back to the early 2003 period, and that's supply inelasticity meets rising demand. That's the industrial commodities sector plus precious metals. Second major theme is emerging markets, partly because of Wall Street's secular bear market, and also we're in an environment now where I think both cyclical and fundamental factors strongly favor the growth in a number of the emerging markets. My very favorite emerging market for the long term remains India, but really all of the Asian emerging markets are interesting stories. I expect to have most of my emerging markets investments in Asia over the next many years. There are other promising areas: Eastern Europe, South America, particularly Brazil and Mexico, I think, in terms of relative safety. There's the allure of Russia with its resources. There are governance problems there, of course. There's the allure of China with its fast-growing economy. Some governance problems or concerns there, of course. But I'm more interested in China now because of the clear intent of the government to improve the performance of its stock market. And actually, markets with the China sphere may hold up, I say may hold up better in a general stock market downturn, but I do expect all markets to weaken. And when that stock market correction is underway and apparent to all, we will see all markets move down, I think, in that environment, or certainly the overwhelming number of them. I don't think there will be many bolt holes. Government bonds could be a bolt hole. Not guaranteed, nothing is, but they may be a temporary bolt hole, but it's a dangerous sector, as I'll be explaining in a moment, in my view. But basically, the same people who've been driving up emerging markets, Google, you name it, have also been piling into commodity markets and precious metals and so on, and driving these up as well. So when perceptions change, and this is very much a perceptions game, markets get these big manic from the manic to the depressive and back again, emotional swings. When the perception switches from the glass being half full to half empty, we see all those markets drop back together as people raise cash. And I think that having some cash in terms ready, in terms of your buying opportunities during this correction. If I've overemphasized the correction, it's just because it hasn't started yet, and so the risks, the short to medium term risks, are increasing. But even more important than the correction, I feel, is that it will create a wonderful buying opportunity. And I think we'll see that by the fourth quarter of this year at latest, and depending on when the actual correction starts and when the Fed responds in terms of interest rates, cutting interest rates. But I do expect that to be a superb buying opportunity, and then I expect to have a pretty good run in stock markets, to see a pretty good run in stock markets throughout 2007 and 2008 at least. So that's putting the risk, if I've overemphasized the risk, it's putting it into perspective. I'm looking for, as I say, a medium-term correction defined as 3 to 6 months and minimum 10%, but it would probably be more off the highs, but probably not more than 30%, and I'm not looking for the 50% retracement of the gains from the 2002 lows that Robin Griffiths is talking about. I think that would take some sort of shock to the global system, some sort of environmental catastrophe or serious outbreak, a pandemic. And I'm not in the business of forecasting things of that nature, although we all recognize that they are statistical possibilities. Okay. Moving on to government bonds. Why don't I like the government bonds? I think markets, or investors rather, certainly analysts are quite complacent about this. They're basically saying that pension funds will have so much money, that they baby boomer money, that they have to pile into these things, that yields won't come down. They say that China and Japan will have to go on buying in perpetuity here to keep their own currencies down and to finance the demand for consumer goods and other goods that those countries produce. This type of argument. Other people say, well, actually, we have deflationary problems, not inflationary problems, and the historic norm is over the very, very long term is for low yields. Well, here are the problems with those arguments, and I think a lot of these are post facto rationalizations for why bond yields have not risen very much. That conundrum that Alan Greenspan talked about a few months ago. And certainly there's weight of cash, a lot of liquidity sloshing around the system. There is a very real fear of deflationary pressures. Now, if you are at least in your late 30s, you'll remember back in the 1980s, when long-term interest rates and short-term interest rates in the US, UK, and elsewhere soared up to incredible heights, getting up to 14, 15, 16%. Excuse me, just taking a little bit of a drink of water there. When Paul Volcker was clearly using monetary tightening to wring inflation, to first to tame inflation and gradually strangle it, get it out of the system, in terms of that runaway inflation that we were actually seeing. Nevertheless, for the better part of the next decade, most of the 80s, people were still looking over their shoulder and fearing and talking about and forecasting another inflation attack. That's what happens. People are always expecting what they saw in the last cycle to reoccur at any time in the next cycle that they happen to be in, and it can be very costly in terms of investment policy. So people were reluctant to buy the government bonds, even though they were the buy of a 40-year cycle. Now, we get the same thing here today. People have been so accustomed to the, well, only in reverse, the people have been so accustomed to the disinflationary, deflationary environment, and they can point to the deflationary pressures from globalization, aided and abetted by technology, and the government statistics, which are completely bogus. Just look at what you pay for your bills this year, household bills this year, compared with what you were paying last year. And you'll know that inflation is running at anywhere from 7 to 10% or more wherever you happen to, depending on where you happen to live. Now, that is just, you are not seeing that, of course, in IT goods and some of the consumer goods, clothing, for instance. But you certainly are seeing it in insurance and in education and in many foods and in restaurant bills and in transport and in fuel costs and so on and so on. So again, the the crowd is, say, looking over its shoulder, expecting deflationary, disinflationary pressures. So remember what Governor, Fed Governor, and Ben Bernanke had said, now Chairman of the Fed, of course, that in all of his speeches in 2005 about not having deflation and how we could deal with inflation and the helicopter dropping money from helicopters and the electronic printing press and so on. They are determined not to repeat the Japanese experience, not surprisingly. So if a central bank says that it's going to avoid deflation, there's probably it's probably a good idea to take them at their word, and I certainly do. Then look at all the government borrowing. If they need to borrow that much, do we really want to lend to them? And look at what they're doing. They're selling all these from 30 to 50 year government bonds. Do we really think countries would be issuing 50 year government bonds if they thought that coupons would stay this low, let alone go lower? Of course not. If they thought coupons were going to go lower, yields, in other words, they'd be issuing short-term debt, waiting to convert all that to longer-term debt when the bond yields were much lower. You only sell 50-year government bonds if you're pretty well convinced that long-term interest rates can only go up over the long term. And they will go up over the long term because governments have sown the seeds of inflation, as I said before, with all the printing of money that's taken place. And it's not just the United States, of course. It's the Chinese, it's the European Union, it's everybody been printing tons and tons of money, and they can get away with it because of the deflationary pressures coming out of China and other low-cost manufacturing centers, aided by the technological innovation. So I think that we will, you know, that we're nearing the end in this big cycle for government bonds, where we see the low yields, and I do expect yields to be rising, not in any kind of linear fashion, but in rolling waves over the next many, many years. And as this, if this stock market correction that I envisage occurs, and if that causes yields to come down again because there's a flight into government bonds, then that will create two things. It'll create a great buying opportunity that I referred to earlier in stock markets, and it'll create a great short selling opportunity in government bonds, pretty well simultaneously. Now, moving on to currencies, interest rates still favor the dollar in the short term, but people have pretty well discounted highs on the interest rates in the 4.75 to 5% level for the federal funds rate. In other words, another 25 to 50 basis points on the upside. I think they're probably right in concluding that that's about the extent of it, and I maintain that the dollar peaked in November and is on its way back down. It peaked up near the 91, 91.5 level on the US dollar index, and will get down to the 80 level near the historic lows. And I think we'll probably see that later this year, and if not this year, that we'll see it in 2007. And I think the US would be absolutely, the US government, that is, would be absolutely delighted to see that dollar move down, just to give the US economy a little bit of a little bit more of a competitive edge in some of its export markets. Now, but the basic point is here that there is no hard fiat currency. There is no hard paper money currency. Governments are committed to just increasing the supply of this, keeping their currencies down, and that in itself is, of course, inflationary. Certainly all the printing is, and therefore that for investors, increasingly in the eyes of investors, the hard store of value is in resources. And That brings us right on to gold, silver, platinum, palladium. But it also extends to other collectibles, popular collectibles, fine art. People shouldn't be buying fine art if they don't like fine art, or just very attractive contemporary pictures that, if you know your market, could do extremely well over the long term. I like that market, but it's a specialist market. But there is a fine art fund, and which you can look up on Google. I think it's probably a pretty good idea overall. I would expect that sector to appreciate. And I'm also doing something that I bought any of the fine art fund, but I am a buyer of art. Otherwise, I would be a buyer of the fine art fund. And I stepped up my art purchases last year, and will do so again this year. Although I haven't got anywhere to hang the stuff, which is the main problem. And walls are all full. And what I'm also doing, and I say I haven't done this since the 1970s and late 1970s, and mainly in the 1980s. It would have been a good idea to do it in the early 1970s, but I didn't have any money then. And that is that I've taken out once again, subscriptions to the jewelry departments of Christie's and Sotheby's. So I'll get all of their jewelry catalogs, and I will dabble a little bit in that market. I'll only buy at auction, where you're competing almost invariably against dealers, and they're only going to pay up to a level where they can, unless they've been assigned to buy something for someone, they're only going to pay up to a price that they can then go on and double or triple in their retail shop. So I will be doing, say, more art buying. I'd be doing some jewelry buying, and Mrs. Fuller can wear that bling on special occasions, and the rest of the time it'll sit in a safe. So again, inflation hedges, hard assets in scarce supply. That's an area that does interest me in this particular cycle. In terms of raising cash, I'm just dropping back here a little bit on these stock markets. I do hold a lot of cash. You know, I don't make recommendations. Who would I be recommending to? Are the Fuller Money subscribers come from 47 different countries? They are different ages, different risk tolerances, different financial expectations. So on. There are no model portfolios. I just tell you what I think and what I'm doing with my own money. And if that helps you in your own thinking about what's appropriate for you, then hopefully Owen and I have done our jobs in here. But in terms of my strategies, I want hard assets, I want inflation hedges, and in terms of equities, bottom line, I don't want to buy or own anything that is competing with China and other low-cost producers. I want to be buying the companies that are selling things to China and other low-cost centers, thus the emphasis on the resources companies. Okay, moving on. Industrial metals, it's a major speculative area that I will continue to play. And when I said I had a lot of cash, I always hold a reasonable amount of cash because I do a lot of leveraged trading. I live off that trading, and fortunately the trading has gone well, as veteran subscribers will know, since every one of my trades and investments is immediately detailed in the comment of the day. And so I've been able to build up cash reserves, not by selling things, but through the through the trading in these resources and other leveraged plays, and I will be using a significant amount of that cash for the buying opportunities that I envisage once this medium-term stock market correction has occurred. And I think I've got to make it a wrap here, folks, because I'm going on too far, so or too long. So apologies for that. Have an absolutely splendid weekend. All the best.